I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. The guy who claims he just don't believe the fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking side me, running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died deep. If you don't love it, leave it. This song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run down my country, man. You walking on the fight beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me, and that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Some interesting things, items that have come up today, and several, I think, would be of particular note. Anyway, I'm just looking for... one of the particularly interesting items. Oh, yes. this is a fundraising letter put out by B'nai B'rith on December 23rd, just before Christmas. Well, that's their Hanukkah celebration. Let's take a look at item by item. I'm going to read the whole thing to you just so that nobody might think that, well, I'm just being selective. It's called 2019, the Year in Review. And right at the very top, click here to make a charitable donation. Well, we won't be doing that. As we celebrate the happy holiday of Hanukkah, we also illuminate the year 2019. It was long, tumultuous, and at times horrifying and unfathomable for the Jewish world. Anti-Semitism and violent Jew hatred arose. Not to be a literary critic, but of course I have a background in English literature, but okay. Well, what is the difference between anti-Semitism and violent Jew hatred? I don't know, maybe one's violent. It emanated from all corners, including white supremacists, radical Islamists, and even Hebrew Israelites. Now, those were an odd group of sect of blacks who believed they're Israelites, and they went and shot up a kosher, I guess it was a delicatessen in Jersey City, New Jersey. For B'nai B'rit Canada, it certainly was a year to remember. Our small but potent team was always there to tackle the threats faced by this country's Jewish community while also showing solidarity with those facing human rights abuses abroad. Many of our initiatives and campaigns were successful in thwarting racism, anti-Semitism, and hatred. We produced important precedents for the future of our community. If you support our vital work, please click to make a tax-deductible donation in honor of the 8 nights of Hanukkah. Here are the top 8 highlights of 2019. In September, we blew the whistle on a star federal candidate and revealed his history of anti-Semitic and anti-Israel comments. Within hours of our press release, he was dropped as a candidate. Wow! So they deplatformed this fellow. He was a liberal candidate in Quebec, a Muslim former imam named Gillette. In June, our initiatives and advocacy informed the federal government's adoption of the vital International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance working definition of anti-Semitism, which makes just about every criticism of Jews anti-Semitic. In March, a TV show called Muslim Perspectives was removed from the airwaves within 24 hours of our petition exposing its anti-Semitic content. In August, our complaint about anti-Semitic sermons by an Edmonton imam, that Safar Bangash, resulted in his ouster from preaching at a community center. So they're basically deplatforming, you know, okay, he still can preach if he can find a place to preach. not to be a dog in the manger about this, but a community center, if it's taxpayers' money, that presumably means money that's come from all taxpayers, why should this man be banned because of his views? B'nai B'rith was the only advocacy group that rallied around the community by taking elections candidates to court over the date of the federal election, which fell on a Jewish holiday. Thanks to our advocacy, significant accommodations were made to meet the needs of observant Jews. Oh, wait a sec. You know, this endless special whining and pleading. We are different and we want to be recognized. And in fact, you've got to make all sorts of accommodations for our differences. As a matter of fact, there are all sorts of advanced polls. I believe this past election, if memory serves me correctly, there were seven days. So you didn't, even if election day, October 21st, fell on a date that was a holy day for a small number of Jews, but even if that was the case, they didn't have to vote on election day. There were a number of days, and I believe it was 7, set aside for advanced polls. So all this special whining, was over the top. But you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. In July, following our public complaint, the Toronto Church canceled the scheduled event intended to honor the mastermind of a terror attack on Israel. And in August, the publisher and editor of Your Ward News were given harsh sentences for willful promotion of hatred. B'nai B'rith has long advocated for the strong sentencing of the two. A Montreal taxi driver was fired and charged after B'nai B'rith reported the violent assault of a Jewish man in a parking garage. But our work is not done. Oh, no, there's more people to be shut down, deplatformed, and so on. The deportation of ex-Nazi Helmut Oberlander defending Israeli wines against discrimination fighting for the freedom of Jewish students on campus. Well, they're totally free. And anyway, there's other things they're after. But I'm particularly turned off, annoyed by the deportation. They want the deportation of an ex-Nazi Helmut Oberlander. They're very cautious about the way they word this. An ex-Nazi. Now, I'm not aware that Mr. Oberlander ever joined the National Socialist Party. He did indeed fight in the armies of the Third Reich. He was basically conscripted as a 17-year-old translator. But it's part of the smear against him. Yeah, ex-Nazi. Well, I mean, he probably still is a Nazi, but he doesn't want to say that. That's fairly typical of this type of sleazy propaganda. Oberlander, incidentally, is 95. Yeah, you heard that right. 95. Came to Canada in 1955, I believe. He became a citizen in 1960. He became a big builder and developer in the Kitchener-Waterloo area, which is about 60 miles north or west of Toronto. And made a huge contribution to his community. He became wealthy along the way. And beginning over 25 years ago, after endless pressure from various Jewish lobby groups, the federal government sought to remove his citizenship. And that's been done and undone several times. He's been 25 years through the courts. Now, poor Mr. Oberlander was 17 years old when the German armies moved into the Ukraine in the war against Russia, communist Russia. He was a Volksdeutsch, that is a German, a part of a German community living in what's now the Ukraine. He spoke German, of course. He spoke Russian and Ukrainian. So he's a bit of a valuable commodity. And the Germans said, well, you're in this man's army now as a translator. And he was. He was with the Einsatzgruppen, which combated partisans and in some cases killed a fair number. Well, they were accused of war crimes. But in the area of personal responsibility, Mr. Oberlander was never accused of a war crime. And in fact, several judges said there was no evidence he had ever done anything wrong. He had never shot anybody or brutalized anybody or anything of that nature. As the war began to turn against Germany, he moved with the German army west. He was in West Germany, and he applied to immigrate to Canada. He gave up his German citizenship in 1960. He became a Canadian citizen in 1960. Okay, so what's the knock on Mr. Oberlander? Well, it's alleged that he could not have gotten admission to Canada or citizenship if he had truthfully answered the question, were you ever a member of groups like the Einsatzgruppen or the SS? The Jewish groups and the government say he lied. He says he didn't lie because he was never asked. Well, you'd say, well, where's the transcript of the hearing? Oh, that should clear things up. Well, there is no transcript of the interviews with the RCMP. They long since had, been shredded or burned or disappeared. So there's no objective evidence. That's one thing. Nevertheless, the courts repeatedly found, because this is now pursued as a civil matter rather than a criminal matter, where the test is balance of probabilities, not beyond a reasonable doubt. And there's a slight difference. So several judges rejecting eyewitness evidence of people who were processed around the same time, who said that basically after the first 6 months, the RCMP people who questioned potential immigrants no longer asked, were you a member of this or that German unit? They were more interested if the applicant came from the East to determine whether that person had been a member of the Communist Party, and which Mr. Oberlander could say no, he had not been. So there is no evidence that Mr. Oberlander lied. Nonetheless, this has bounced back and forth up to appeals and so on. The last act in the drama occurred in early in December when the Supreme Court refused to give leave. That is, they decided they would not hear a ruling by the Federal Court of Appeal. So now the government may deport Mr. Oberlander. Well, should they deport Mr. Oberlander? Well, on every possible grounds, no. Now, number one, where would you deport him to? As of 1960, he's no longer a German citizen. So you can't deport him to a country that he's not a citizen of. Would you deport him to the Ukraine? Well, the Ukraine is now an independent country. His connection with the Ukraine ceased, you know, 75 years ago. He's 95 and not in the best of health, obviously. On humanitarian grounds, is he a threat to Canada? No. In fact, he was a huge benefit to Canada. Exactly the sort of immigrant we should be looking to attract. Rather than people with a paw out, here's a man who is prepared to use his two hands to build. And there's a further wrinkle in all this. And that's this. Oberlander joined this German unit as a conscript, really, when he was 17. Now, even if he had committed, even if it was bad judgment to join the Einsatzgruppe, not that he had any choice, incidentally, and he may not even have known what he was joining, but even if you could somehow say, well, there was some responsibility there. All right, but he was 17. Now, if I think the current term is young offender, that's anybody under 18, commits a serious crime, well, even up to murder, that person is given the benefit of the belief that although you are, have what we in religion used to call achieve the age of reason, in other words, you know right from wrong, you are, because of your age and inexperience, less culpable than you would be if you were older. And so we have a whole regime of special breaks for young offenders, even violent ones. You can commit murder and you will not serve any more than 10 years. So nobody's ever accusing Mr. Oberlander of murder or anything like that. So why exactly is the Jewish lobby so fanatically attached to damaging him? Well, that's, you know, this is the never again spirit. This is the endless vengeance and so on. Now, this is where it comes back to a healthy country. Canada should be making decisions, putting Canada and Canadians first. And that's what we ought to be doing. How does it in any way benefit Canada to deport Helmut Oberlander, strip him of his citizenship? Well, it doesn't. In fact, it's disgustingly ungrateful and sends very much the wrong signals. It's also sends the out the idea that even a person who made a big contribution to this country can be horrifically punished and for something that might be deemed to be a mistake that happened when they were underage. Now, that's not even a mistake, really. I mean, he didn't he have any choice, and he didn't commit a crime. He never killed, he never brutalized anybody. And there is no evidence that he ever lied. And even if he had lied, this is where the contradictions and the anti-German, in fact, it's just plain German bashing. The anti-German feeling comes out. Had he lied, that isn't even considered necessarily an impediment to immigration to Canada. That's right. Because it's understood, well, people who are would-be refugees, well, they kind of feel they have to lie because they're desperate. Well, if all of those mitigating factors and so on work for somebody who's just come from Somaliland, why is there no benefit of the doubt given to this contributing decent old man? Well, it comes down to the fact that this country has far too long had to deal with this vengeful Jewish lobby that promotes its interests. Anyway, I hope in the new year you'll pick up that telephone of yours, call your member of parliament, and say, don't deport Helmut Oberlander. Let him live out his remaining months or year or so in peace in the country to which he contributed so much. Now, here's a grim warning. A criminal offense to affirm actual gender. If Canada passes recently proposed legislation, a young person who's uncomfortable with his or her gender will have limited choices, and so will the parents. The Senate in Canada will soon be voting on Bill 202, a measure that criminalizes so-called conversion therapy for young people to accept their born gender. It would make doctors, psychologists, counselors, psychiatrists, and pastors, as well as the person who schedules the appointment, in violation of the criminal code. That psychologist, if they counsel that child that this is something that child will grow out of, or if they counsel the child that biologically that child is either male or female, they are in the correct body, that would be an offense under the Act, explains Jay Cameron, litigation manager for the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. And parents would not be able to seek help for their children. It deprives parents of the statistically most successful means of treating gender dysphoria. It's the most successful way to treat gender dysphoria, because gradually a person becomes comfortable in the body they're in, Cameron submits. They come to recognize, I'm a girl or I'm a boy, and they stop being uncomfortable, and they go on and they live the rest of their life. But under Bill 202, there is only one choice left for parents and counselors, and that is to affirm the young person's gender confusion, provide hormone treatments and surgeries to transition to the opposite gender, which is impossible, even with hormone and surgery treatment. This is absolutely diabolical. This is, of course, part of the attack, cultural Marxist attack on the family and on society. Enshrining rights that are not there or should not be there to children, to make life altering decisions. And parents are basically parents and others, pastors, psychiatrists, psychologists, doctors, would not be allowed to refer them to conversion therapy. And conversion therapy, yes, is controversial, but it has had a fair deal of success. You see, if you can remember your days of going through puberty, depending on, you know, on your personality and so on. As your body changes, if you're a boy, as your voice deepens, you begin to grow hair on your lips and you start not healthy, not just above your lips and on your cheeks, and your genital area, on your arms, and you know, you have new desires and so on. Well, I won't go through the whole thing, but as your body changes, sometimes this is awkward. It's also awkward for a girl, or can be, as she develops breasts and starts getting her periods and so on. So there are changes that a young person goes through. Some seamlessly, no problem. Others, not so seamlessly. And because of the propaganda that was not even present even 10 years ago, young people are being encouraged to think, well, you can be whatever you want. I mean, you may have been told you're a little girl, but you can be a little boy if you want, and vice versa. And in my opinion, that really is child abuse. What happens in a small minority of cases is that the child actually feels that it wants to be the opposite sex, the gender dysphoria. Very often, this is a result of group influence. It might be a Facebook group that this person is on, and other or several others in the group suddenly say, well, I think, you know, I was born a boy, but I'd like to be a girl, or vice versa. Or it may be the little group that you hang around with in school. Especially girls are very impressionable. And if you're very susceptible to peer pressure. You know, if Susie Q decides she's going to pierce her nose, the others want to do it too, to fit in. The problem is that as the person grows a little bit more, or matures a little bit more, very often the doubts, as Jay Cameron is saying, disappear. They become, that things work out. They become comfortable with the body they're in, and then they're confident. Yes, I really am a boy, or yes, I really am a girl. And I remember, in my own case, not that I was ever confused about boy and girl, but I seemed to have a lot of problems, not to be too crude about vomiting, when I was in high school. I wouldn't say a lot, but from time to time. I haven't had that experience. I bet I am sick to my stomach, maybe once every couple of years now. But back then, it was considerably more frequent. And it wasn't because of abusing alcohol or, any of the, perhaps glib possible explanations. And what I think it was is that your body is changing, but not all parts of your body change at quite the same pace. And the digestive system may not change, expanded quite fast enough. That's at least my theory. And I know others who have had similar situations, aches and pains, because they go through spurts of growth, and so on. So that tends to work its way out, usually within a year or two. And so this is the frightening thing: if the child is allowed or induced by crackpot doctors or others to yes. Start the hormone therapy and so on to change from boy to girl or vice versa. This can be a lifetime altering moves. And the frightening thing about this legislation is it might prevent parents and others from even mentioning it. This is a coup d'etat against the rights of parents. Here's an interesting article. I'm only going to read a little part of it. It's by Bruce Pardee, who's a traditionalist lawyer at Queen's professor at Queen's University, and a lawyer. And he says, Tories must be liberals to win the next election. Now, this is not quite the usually depressing, what I would call red Tory line, which says, well, you know, the only way conservatives can win the election is not to be conservative. you heard that right. The only way you can be to win the election is not to be conservative. So you can win it if you you basically become a liberal and you sort of out-liberal the liberals. That's actually not what he's saying. And I'm not really going to go to his main argument, but I was very impressed by a paragraph. It's really well worth following his thought on this. The modern version of liberalism means essentially the opposite of its pro-individual, pro-freedom antecedents of the 19th century. It embraces an expansive welfare state, extensive regulation of individual behavior and speech, redistribution of wealth, unequal application of the law in pursuit of equality of outcome. That's really one of the dangerous things about cultural Marxism today, which infects the Canadian courts and infects much of the media. We only have equality if we have equality of outcomes. And that is, of course, what makes the notion of equality so problematic. One of the most oft-quoted and on the surface nonsensical formulations ever was that in the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. What does that mean? Well, on the surface, it's nonsense. Created equal, in what sense? That God loves everybody equally? I don't know. That's a theological point. It's a matter of faith. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But okay, in that sense, perhaps all men are equal. But I'm not sure that means much. Does it mean all people should be treated equally before the law? Now that I can subscribe to, yes. Doesn't mean all men are the same? Well, heavens no. All men are created equal? No. I mean, some are mentally retarded. Some are crippled. Some are extremely bright. Some are extremely fast. Some are extremely dexterous. That's, you know what I mean? In no imaginable way is that true, that all men are created equal. This is, of course, given rise to the ideological commitment of the cultural Marxists to make all people equal. Well, that's the lie they tell you. They will. But in the end, their elite will have the power, most of the power. But anyway, that's the idea. All men must be made equal. And if they're not equal, because they indeed are not equal, people have different talents, different abilities, different energy levels, different motivations. I mean, some people work very, very, very hard and achieve a lot. Others, hey, they're more laid back, what's the sweat, etc. Anyway, so back to Bruce Pardee's ideas, that the modern liberals have in fact abandoned liberalism for something fairly close to cultural Marxism. Those who call themselves liberals in the political realm are now illiberal in their sensibilities and aspirations. Governments supervise, subsidize, and control virtually every aspect of modern life.
markets and financial systems, public schools and universities, healthcare, media, food production, energy production, telecom services, the professions, and even speech. Our courts do not believe in equal application of the law. We are eroding the presumption of innocence and other aspects of due process. We have abandoned even the expectation that laws will be written clear and understandable to all. Instead, citizens are subject to the arbitrary discretion of government agencies that pursue their own agendas. Identity politics reign, and the surveillance state steadily expands. And he says that conservatives, if they're going to really distinguish themselves from liberals rather than being simply liberal white, or you know, as is often the presentation, we agree with the goals and the agenda, we'll do it more efficiently or something like that. They have to offer something different, and I would certainly agree with that all the way. This was an expose in the National Post from 10 days ago. Children schooled in climate terror. A Toronto mother says a confusing school presentation involving teen activist Greta Thunberg and the ticking clock left her young daughter fearing Earth's imminent demise, and schools should be more careful about what they're teaching 7-year-olds. Yeah, I certainly agree with that. At least one child yelled, "I don't want to die," during a presentation on climate change delivered to a grade 2-3 class on October 4th. A group of 7- and 8-year-olds had gathered in the library of Ellenbank Junior Middle Academy in Etobicoke, that's part of the area I used to represent, to watch a video of a speech by Greta Thunberg delivered at the UN Climate Action Summit in September. In her remarks, a visibly upset Thunberg accuses world leaders of failing future generations, ignoring climate change, and stealing her child. Hey, well, they should send that mouthy little girl back to school. But okay. Quote, "People are suffering, people are dying." Oh, this is Greta Thunberg. "Entire ecosystems are collapsing," she says. "We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?" And this is just total over-the-top exaggeration. People are dying. Really, they're dying from climate change? Where? Ecosystems are collapsing. Is that so? This is the beginning of mass extinction. There have never been more human beings on this earth. Real poverty affects only 10% of this vastly expanded population's numbers. It was 70% at the end of the Second World War. People are not dying out. Just the opposite. This is just plain bullshit. Nonetheless, a young child could be quite upset by this. After Greta's 5-minute speech, a large carbon clock was displayed on the projector screen, counting down from 8 years, the estimated amount of time it will take to emit enough carbon to warm the world by 1.5 degrees Celsius, according to Mercator Research Institute on Global Commons and Climate Change. The clock can be modified to display 26 years, the estimated amount of time left to avoid a 2-degree centigrade warming. Well, even if, and this is a huge, huge if, the Earth were to warm up a little bit. It has done that before. This would not be the end of the world. Leila Blasevich said her daughter, Joylea, 8, came home that day confused and scared. She said, "Mommy, they say we're going to die in 8 years. They were terrified with the information." The Blasevich says her daughter remembers her friend yelling out, I don't want to die, and the rest of the class joining in. This sort of outrageous scare tactics based on bullshit science. It's terrible to do this to little children. And I hope that the school gets a big old rap on its head for this. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. We're still in the Christmas season. I'm really happy to play Christmas songs. And this is from a CD called Christmas Dream by Julie Keach Harris. I know Julie. She's a fine lady, wife, mother, beautiful blonde lady, singer, country and western singer in Nashville, Tennessee. Here are a couple of songs from her CD.
Jingle bell time, dancing. jingle bell, that's the jingle bell rock.
Trim my Christmas tree with some decorations.
had to baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry tonight.
Julie Keach Harris, this is Paul Frum, and you're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to play a song here. I really like this. I guess you know that, because I played it a few times before. It's called It May Be a Holiday to You, But It's Christmas to Me. It's by an Ontario country and western singer named Don Murdoch, and Don wrote this but I think it was 4 years ago. And why are we having trouble opening this thing? Don lives in Colburn, Ontario. And I think we are, yes, here we are. So this is the Christmas song with Don Murdoch, more accurately, It May Be a Holiday to You, But It's Christmas to Me, with Don Murdoch. Sometimes we do have our problems here. There we are. It's there, but we couldn't see it.
But it's Christmas to me. I'm filled with tradition, love and family. I put it on display each year for all the world to see. It might be a holiday. birthday to you, but it's Christmas to me. I remember as a child, every Christmas Eve, we'd sing our favorite carols as we decorate the tree. Mom would tell us stories, we'd bow our heads and pray. Jesus, our Savior, was born that holy day. We pray for peace in the world so all can enjoy the true meaning of Christmas, the birth of a baby boy. It might be a holiday to you, but it's Christmas to me. I'm filled with tradition, love and family. Christmas to me. Politicians try to tell us, take Christ out of the day, to hide all the symbols we used to celebrate. They say it might offend those who don't believe. Let me tell you, mister, that you're offending me. It might be a holiday to you, but it's Christmas to me. I'm filled with tradition, love and family. I put it on display each year for all the world to see. It might be a holiday to you, but it's Christmas to me. Why must everything be politically correct? Do is treat each other with some respect. It might be a holiday to you, but it's Christmas to me. I'm filled with tradition, love and family. I put it on display each year for all the world to see. It might be a holiday to you, but it's Christmas to me.
Paul Fromm here on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with the game tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever.